Let us bow together as we pray. Our Father who art in heaven, we ask that thou would still our hearts and our minds as we have gathered here in this place to worship thee. We ask that thou wouldst take away from us any thoughts of outside activities, the activities of this day or the activities of this weekend, and help us to center our attention and our thoughts upon thee and upon a few moments of quiet silence, upon meditation, upon some time with thee alone. Guide and direct as we go forth in this worship service, and we ask that thou wouldst help each of us as an individual and all of us as a group to know that we have truly worshiped when we leave this place. In the name of him who died that all might live, even Jesus the Christ. Amen. All of us are aware of the age or the era in which we live. We are a technologically oriented people, and we are rapidly becoming more so as the days go by. Because we live in such a fast-moving, ever-changing world, from day to day, it has become immediately necessary for us to make many adjustments in life in order to keep up, so to speak, with the world in which we live. And for the most part, we have done very well in adjusting ourselves to this kind of life. There are, however, some aspects of our lives which once had a great meaning, a great relevance to each of us and to the church in general. And because of the age in which we live, because of the technology and the machines and the space travel and things of this sort, we have in a sense lost some of the meaning, some of the relevance to these aspects of our lives. And I make reference here to the place and the meaning of prayer in my life and in your life today, and to the meaning of miracles and their presence in the life which we live in this country. It is our purpose this morning to take a brief look at both prayer and miracles, and thereby try to see their meaning and place in the technological age in which we live.
Jesus instructed his disciples upon being asked to teach them to pray by saying, "But thou, when thou prayest, enter into thy closet." Just what type of closet was Jesus referring to when he asked his disciples to enter into their closet? Was he referring to the 6x5 cubicle that most of us think of today when we consider closets? Is this the type of closet which Jesus was telling us to enter into? Most of us today, if we would try to enter into such a closet as this to pray, would have to first of all dodge the shoe boxes, which would come toppling off of the top shelf, and to push all of the clothing out of the way, and try not to be too surprised at all the things that had been lost for 5 years. Is this the type of closet which Jesus was referring to? I guess all of us who have been to college have many good memories of our experiences there, and also I suppose that if all of us would be honest, we would at the same time have to admit that there are many bad memories associated with our college experience. But I guess if we would continue to be honest, that we would have to admit that both kinds of experiences go into making up a college experience, both good and bad experiences. I remember some of the bad experiences I had in college of being under a lot of pressure, studying for tests, writing papers. But also, I'm thankful for a good memory I have in association with this. And this is the time which I spent in prayer many times. I would climb the small hill. I went to Mars Hill College, which is in the western part of North Carolina. And I would climb a small hill behind the boys' dormitory oftentimes. Well, I say a hill, most of you probably would consider it a small mountain. But I would climb this hill early in the morning a lot of times before the sun had burned the dew out of the valley and spend maybe 30 or 45 minutes in prayer and in meditation. And again in the evenings before the sun would set, oftentimes I would climb the same hill again and spend maybe 30 minutes, 45 minutes, or an hour in prayer and reading the Bible, just in simply meditation. Well, to me, this was my closet at Morris Hill. This was the way I found my closet. Several years ago, I read the story in I forget what magazine it was, Home Missions or Reader's Digest, of a woman who had trouble finding her closet. She said that before she was married, that she spent a certain time every day in devotions. But she said that after she was married, she found this harder and harder to do each day. She says, I just don't have any time of my own anymore. She stated that she had to get up in the morning and cook breakfast for her children and her husband and help dress her children and spend 10 minutes getting her husband out of bed. And then she had to drive the children to school and go grocery shopping and 10,000 and one other things during the day, house cleaning and whatnot. And she said, I just found that I no longer had time for devotional life, for reading my Bible, for praying. And she said, every day I could see my devotional life, my contact with God going downhill every day. And seemingly there was nothing I could do about it. Until one day, she said, I made a startling discovery. And that discovery was this. She said, I found that no longer did I have to set aside a certain amount of time each day to pray to God or to read my Bible. Because, she said, I could pray, for example, when I was cooking breakfast for my family, that each one of them would grow up and develop into a normal and healthy human being. I could pray while I was driving my children to school that they would develop normally intellectually and that they would one day be able to go to college. And she said this became a very meaningful part of her prayer life. And this became her closet. Well, these are just two isolated examples of how two individuals found their closets. Jesus continued in teaching his disciples to pray by this statement, give us this day our daily bread. Going back to my college experience again, I never will forget one boy who lived in the same private home as me, and he liked to sing quite a bit, which was okay. But I never will forget one song that he sang. It was some hymn, and he sang it so much I think I never will forget the words to it. And I don't know the name of the hymn, but the words went something like this. This world is not my home, I'm just a passing through. My treasures are all laid up somewhere beyond the blue. And there were several stanzas of it, and he knew each stanza perfectly. And there's nothing wrong with this song. It's a good hymn. But I wondered sometimes, because this fellow who was a good friend of mine, I wondered sometimes if because he sang this song so much that he was so focusing his attention on the eschaton that he forgot the right here and now, his existential existence. This is not what Jesus was encouraging us to do in the Lord's Prayer. He encouraged us to get right down to earth in our prayer. Give us this day our daily bread. How much more down to earth can you get than this? There's a real good article in this month's issue of Reader's Digest, and I won't try to bring your attention to all of it, but one point that was made in there is that our prayer should be relevant. The author of this article stated that if Christ would come in this day and age to London, he wouldn't talk of shepherds and of sheep so much as he would automobiles, engineers, and airplanes. Perhaps this is to let us know that we should attempt to make our prayer relevant to the needs which each of us see around us and the needs in which each of us see in our own lives this day.
My part is on miracles. Miracles have been defined as a work wrought by a divine power for a divine purpose by means which are beyond man's reach. Miracles demonstrate or point up the miraculous love and the power of our God to this world and to the human race. Miracles have been called wonders, signs, powers, and works. The natures of miracles at some points cause people to question their qualification as being extraordinary For example, the plagues in Egypt are not unknown to the land, but their intensity, their dread succession as they followed one another, their connection with the words of Moses which went before Pharaoh's trials, with Israel's deliverance which they greatly helped. These events were used by Moses as God led him to lead his people to freedom. Down through the centuries, different groups have made criticisms of miracles coming from Jesus' own people, the Jews, by the rationalist, by the skeptics, by the pantheist, and the heathens. There are listed some 94 miracles in the Old Testament. Prominent among these are the Exodus and the Red Sea miracles. In the New Testament, we have some 87 miracles listed. Among these, the coming of God in the form of Jesus Christ to live among man. Also, the miracles of healing that Jesus performed during his ministry here on earth, giving sight to the blind for the very first time. The miracles recorded in God's Word have made a great impact upon the people in the respective periods in which they live. The 20th century is no exception. It is a wonderful time to be living and to see the miracles as they are wrought. Miracles in scientific and technological advances, whereby man can see God's creation. In a short time past, we have seen man place his foot on the moon for the very first time. Earth's people are still looking forward to the time that we will have live color television pictures coming from the moon. In a technological age, we find man living in the high standard of Earth's history. Miracles in medicine. It is possible now to remove a human heart and to place it in a controlled condition and allow doctors to work on it, while an artificial heart keeps the patient alive and then putting the human heart back in. Just recently I read where that a doctor has announced that there is some hope that in the near future we will have a cure for leukemia. It is expected in the next 10 years that we will have a vaccine for cancer. I'm sure that all of you know a living miracle in your life at some time or another. I have such a privilege as this in my own community. In this church which I serve, there is a man who was told that 5 years ago that he would never walk again. 5 years has passed. Today, this man does walk. The doctors cannot give any explanation why. The only thing that they can say is that he does walk. This man does not hesitate to tell you or anyone else who comes in his presence who has provided him the miraculous power to get up and maneuver around. But God's greatest miracle is when he saved the human soul. The psalmist expressed this idea so well in the 40th Psalm when he said, "The Lord heard my cry and brought me out of the miry clay and put my feet on a solid rock and put a new song in my mouth." Yes, miracles are real. They are a part of God's world. And they are part of living in God's world.
I talked to a miracle last night. A person who a few months ago had only a few days to live Irreparable heart damage had been done, or so they thought. But Mayo Clinic performed an open heart surgery on this person. She is alive, and therefore it's a miracle. She contends that the doctors performed only a scientific act, but that prayer sustained these doctors and made the miracle possible. For the miracle of healing only comes from God. We discount miracles so easily today, saying the miracle of the deliverance of the Hebrew children from Egypt must have been fiction, it was unreal, or we must be able to explain it as some natural phenomena. The real natural phenomena is that it was not the miracle of deliverance that we should look at, but the miracle of answered prayer. For in Exodus 3:7 we find, "And the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people which are in Egypt, and have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters." Exodus 3:9, he says, "Now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel is come unto me." Miracles do not just happen. They are brought about by prayer, by the strong voice of God's people coming up before him. And so we discount the miracle, but if so, we must discount the prayer and take praying out of our life as being meaningless. How can we say that there is no miracle if we believe that prayer can be answered? For if we believe that prayer can be answered and there be no miracle, then prayer is most useless for things that are going to be, certainly will be anyway. Just don't pray and they'll come to pass. For God to hear my prayer is a miracle. For my wife doesn't hardly listen to my voice, and yet God will hear me. And the greatest miracle that I can recall today is the miracle of when in the depths of my sin I cried out, "My God, have mercy on me, for I am a sinner." And the great experience that followed as he forgave my sin and made me clean. Bett said about miracles that nothing happens of itself or by itself. Everything that happens in the world is really the result of everything else that happens or has happened. For everything is interconnected and interdependent. The ultimate issue of this, with regard to any action of God in nature then, is whether we call it a miracle, providential direction, or answer to prayer. Either way, we must have an answer. So if you rule out belief in God, the only alternatives are fate and chance in all things. And for the thinking man, these become unthinkable and ridiculous. The only natural answer then to the final problem is that the order of the universe was designed and set in place by a great architect even before the beginning. And that mind, that architect which set it in place, must control all of the laws and natural order of that universe. Now, if we believe that God is, and we admit that God is and that he did design and create, then there cannot be any scientific difficulty involved with this whole subject. For if in all the limitless interactions and natural laws of the universe and its forces are ordered by God, then it must be true that He can direct the events of my life. And if He wills to do so, answer my prayers and yours. This is a miracle. And then if miracle takes place in these answers, and something supernatural and extraordinary is brought about as a consequence of prayer, my answer is that it is His will, and He can use all the known laws and the unknown laws to bring this about, whatever they are. No scientist, regardless of how bigoted he may be, will today admit that science knows all of the laws and all of the forces that are at large in the universe. And therefore, if Christ can raise a man from the dead, if the wind can blow back the waters of the Red Sea, if the Hebrew children can eat manna in the morning, if the Son of God can become incarnate in flesh and dwell among us, and if God can answer our prayers, then He can bring about events which are to us strange and supernatural, but should not, must not, and cannot be discounted by those who practice prayer and advocate it. If we believe not in God, we believe not in prayer. And if we believe not in prayer, there must be little belief in God. And if we say we believe in prayer and discount miracles, we become human paradox. A human paradox. Saying one thing and practicing another.
Let us stand and repeat together the Lord's prayers of benediction, please.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever.